From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Hey, as a reminder, we have continued to leave information on our website at klyt.fm. Really easy to access information you may need others, maybe family or friends, in the Ruidoso in need of assistance or updates. The village of Ruidoso has been real good about continuing to put up needed information. And if you go to klyt.f, right there on the homepage in the Action Center, there's three different links related to Ruidoso. The updates from the village. You'll also find updates from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. That's the rapid response team that's there doing work after the fires, and they were there when the floods hit. So I'm sure they're dealing with it alongside the residents of Ruidoso. And then if you're looking at it and you're like, well, I want to go up there and volunteer, there's a way for you to do that too. There's a link you'll find on our Action Center, all three of those links at klyt.fm. And we would encourage you, obviously, if nothing else, continue to pray for the community of Ruidoso, and that would they would see God's love, especially through the work of everyone doing relief efforts, specifically those from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association with their rapid response team. So thanks to all who've participated, who've given towards the relief efforts. And we'll continue to keep you updated. That Action Center, whether it's Ruidoso or other things, just a great place to go to find out kind of what's, kind of front page and urgent at a glance. And we usually include links to give you easy information. If you or your organization or church have an event or something that the public needs to know about, make sure to send the details to studio@klyt.fm, and then listen for the details right here throughout the day, or maybe even on ABQ Connect. In studio with us, Ray Mondragon joins us monthly, typically, God willing, right, Ray?
Typically, yeah. This is, in fact, this is a momentous occasion.
Are we at 60?
Number 60. So we've been doing this for five complete years, and in August will be the beginning of 6 years
here. Ray, happy anniversary. I didn't get you anything.
Thank you. I didn't.
I just brought charm, wit, and personality.
Well, I thought you'd have a cake or something.
If I knew you were, well, I did know you were coming. Yeah. I didn't even bake a cake. Ray's going to be here for the full hour with the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, which, by the way, let me jump on that, csfnm.org. And the third Tuesday of every month is an opportunity to gather with those with the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. This month, the video, Circular Reasoning in Dating Methods. And this isn't speed dating or anything like
that.
Right? We're talking about a lot of things we've talked about.
Some of the things we've dealt with already, yeah.
Yeah. And that's with Dr. Andrew Snelling. But have you seen this video?
I haven't seen the video, no.
Sure. I'm sure, you've seen a lot of the stuff that's done there. It's quality.
Absolutely.
And free to attend on a monthly basis.
Yeah, we want people to attend, and we encourage families particularly.
Yeah.
And children even.
And homeschool.
Homeschool particularly.
Public school, especially if you're in public.
Especially public school.
Yeah, if you're in public school, get to the Creation Science Fellowship meetings. Third Tuesday of each month at Faith Bible Church on Central at Moon. And again, free to attend. They also have a lending library, resources on the website at csfnm.org. Just a lot of great information. Go to the website, really. It's really all there. And actually, here, before we jump into our content for today, Ray, we did want to mention some things coming up this fall at Chafer Seminary.
Yeah, we'll be starting our fall session, and we have a variety of courses, language courses particularly, both Greek and Hebrew, beginning and advanced courses, theology courses, Bible courses, and I'm teaching in the fall the most important course that I do for Chafer, which is hermeneutics and Bible study methods. And I stress that every believer needs to understand how to read the Bible for themselves, or they'll never grow to maturity.
And actually, later in this hour, we're going to deal a little bit.
We're going to talk about hermeneutics.
Hermeneutics mm-hmm. as it pertains to Genesis chapter 1.
Absolutely. How do you interpret Genesis chapter 1?
So, Chafer website, we want to make sure folks are aware there, too. It's Chafer, chafer.edu, and you'll find the information there. Really, everything you need to know.
Yep, there'll be phone numbers and everything else.
And we mentioned that, by the way. Ray, who's in studio with us, Ray Mondragon, Professor Ray Mondragon. as you mentioned, you're teaching hermeneutics. You've been doing that with Chafer how long now?
Well, since they moved to Albuquerque, I've been involved with them. In fact, one of the reasons they came to Albuquerque is at that time there were a few of us that were available to be able to teach for them.
So if you want to find out more, go to chafer.edu, C-H-A-F-E-R. One more website to mention, and it's really pertaining to this show. Of course, well, a couple together we're going to mention. Remember, these discussions are archived at a couple of different places. One is Ray's website, which is ForHisGloryNM.com. And in addition to that, Ray, the archiving of our discussions on ABQ Connect, what else will the listeners find on the website at ForHisGloryNM.com?
I do a lot of creation science, so there's a whole tab that deals with a whole list of things. Most recent thing that I did was an entire seminar I did in Houston. And I would recommend that as a starting point, actually, because I go through pretty much the same things we've been going through here, except more, a little bit more in depth.
So is that the 2024 Science and Scripture WHBC?
Yes.
It's right at the top of the list if you go to the Creation Science tab at ForHisGloryNM.com.
And then I just generally do Bible teaching, so I've got a lot of expositional studies on there as well. So there's a tab for exposition, and then there's a third major one where I am able to put some of the seminary courses that I do, including the hermeneutics course, are on that list as well.
All right, and that's ForHisGloryNM.com. And the other place we archive this content from ABQ Connect is on our site at abqconnect.online. You'll find, if you go there, just do a search for Ray Mondragon, and you'll see our discussions that we've done on a monthly basis for 5 years now. Happy anniversary, Ray.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's jump into the introduction for today's discussion.
Well, we've been talking primarily about science, and we've dealt with three major areas over the time that we've been doing this. The three major areas, creation versus evolution, and we've been stressing the science aspect, the undermining of the idea of evolution. I don't think it even rises to the level of a scientific theory. Certainly a hypothesis or an idea, but it's more of a philosophical idea because there's no scientific evidence to support it, or very little. So we gave the evidence that God has built into his creation that reveals him as creator. And there's a lot of scientific evidence that we looked at. And kind of related to that, today we're going to look at Genesis 1, kind of the foundation to the idea of God as creator in six creative days. We've also looked at the second major issue of the Genesis flood versus the secular interpretation of the geological column. We get that from historical geology, which is totally different from a biblical perspective. And we looked at the scientific evidence, and I tried to demonstrate there's overwhelming scientific evidence that supports what the Bible teaches concerning a worldwide, or sometimes called a universal, flood. And then we looked at the third major issue, is the issue of time, which we as believers are in conflict with the secular thinking as well. And the secular thinking is based on evolutionary thinking. So if evolution is not a viable theory, then there's some problems with the whole dating issue. And there's plenty of scientific evidence that indicates that the earth is relatively young, just as the Bible indicates. So we've gone over all of that, and now we're going to concentrate more on the biblical text in terms of God as creator. In fact, we started this last month.
So real quick, before we jump into the next idea, you know, we've generally said many times during our discussion each month that a majority of the those that would fall in the pale of Christian Orthodox churches,
evangelical churches,
A majority of them don't subscribe to a young earth or and would
or a universal flood.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Is it essentially the same same percentage on all three of these points?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and even large segments of the Christian evangelical community somehow try to combine evolution and creation. In other words, there's what's called theistic evolution, which is still pretty popular, even though there's no evidence for it.
Okay. I am, for the time being, discontinuing my interruption.
No problem.
Let's move on.
Last time we started the discussion where I think we need to start all discussions, no matter whether you're dealing with science or politics or any area of our culture, you start with God himself. And I tried to lay out the contrasts in terms of the thinking or a worldview. And if we have a biblical worldview, then we believe that God is the creator. If you have an unbelieving worldview or one that is not biblical, then your view of science is a little bit distorted. So I tried to contrast, and we went through a whole list. Some think that the creation is without limit because we can't see the edge of the universe. The Bible indicates that it has boundaries and that it's finite, and it's only God that is infinite. God is the only one that is infinite. He's also the only one that is eternal. And along with thinking that the universe is unending, some think that maybe the universe was eternal. But the Bible makes clear, in the beginning, God. So the creation has a beginning. And if you look at God as creator, he is the one that started all things. And that also implies that God is separate and distinct, which even within the Christian community, there's some confusion over that. God is separate and distinct. We call that transcendent. He's separate from the creation. He's outside of the creation, but yet has interaction within it. So not only is he transcendent, but he is immanent. So these are ideas that the secular world, and particularly secular scientists, don't think about and don't conceive of. And they think in terms of the creation almost with some of the qualities that are only reserved for God. We also talked about absolute truth, and the Bible speaks of God as being truth. And Jesus claims, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. So that is absolute truth, because they are absolute reality. Scientific truth is not absolute, and even scientists will admit this, but the common everyday person probably thinks the closest that you can come to is scientific truth, and that's not true. You can actually encounter absolute truth because it's personal. It's embodied by God himself. We talked about God being self-existent in contrast to a very dependent creation and interaction. Things relate to one another. And life is dependent, whereas God is separate and distinct, but also self-existent, having no needs. And we speak of that from biblical passages, Acts 17, passages in the book of Psalms and elsewhere. And the creation, we think that we think in terms of constants, but the only constant is God himself. And even constants, we're discovering that over time, constants have changed, sometimes radically, sometimes slightly. And even the speed of light today is questioned concerning whether it's a constant itself. So we developed all of these contrasts to get a picture of who God is. And by the way, one of the main purposes of the creation, God built into the creation revelation of himself. And that's one of the main purposes that he has for the creation, that we might discover something of him, such that, as Romans 1 says, man is without excuse because God has adequately revealed himself. So those are some of the things that we spent an entire hour developing and dealing with and trying to demonstrate these contrasts.
Okay, listen, if you just tuned in, we're visiting the full hour today with Ray Mondragon from the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, and the website for that is csfnm.org, and their next meeting is coming up on the 16th, next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
At Faith Bible Church at Central and Moon, watching the video, Circular Reasoning and Dating Methods, which, you know, you've touched on even a little bit today.
We dealt with radiometric dating and some of the issues and problems with it.
But that put together by Dr. Andrew Snelling, and it's free of charge to be a part of that next Tuesday night. So go to csfnm.org for more details. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll jump into a look at Genesis 1 and science. That's right after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, just a reminder, the Moving Forward Conference with the theme of storms, it's a free conference, is coming to, it's actually going to be in near El Paso, Calvary Chapel, Sun City in El Paso. If you're in that area, it's Borderland Road east of Westside Drive there. A free conference coming July 18th through the 20th, a chance to discover how to move forward and put our trust and faith in Jesus through the storms that life is throwing at us or is going to. It's going to be hosted by Dwayne Thompson. Now, Dwayne is with Calvary Three Crosses. This is a lot of churches involved in this, but the host, I'm assuming the moderator, is Dwayne Thompson, Calvary Three Crosses in Las Cruces. Guest worship from Jeff Anderson, who's nationally known as a worship leader. And then the speakers will include Anthony Geraci from Calvary Rodoso, Dave Maestas from Calvary Chapel New Harvest, Los Lunas, who's really putting on this event. That's my connection to it and where we're getting the information. But Leonard Apodaca from Inspire ABQ, Mike Selecki from Redemption Hill Church in Albuquerque, Danny Bost from Calvary Chapel New Harvest Fellowship in Aztec, Dion Cordova with Truth Ministries, Calvary Chapel in Santa Fe, and Jim Suttle, Calvary Chapel of Roswell. If you want details on the Moving Forward Conference, a free conference on the theme of storms, you know, getting through life storms and how God can bring us through that and strengthen us, go to the Calvary New Harvest website. It's calvarynhll.com. And then once you get to the page, go on the on the front page where you see Connect. Just hover over Connect, and then on that drop down, click on Registrations, and you'll see Moving Forward Conference. That is July 18th through the 20th at Calvary Chapel, Sun City in El Paso. And in studio with us for the full hour today, Ray Mondragon is here. Ray with the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, and as we've mentioned from time to time, a professor at Chafer Seminary, and is that right? Chafer
Theological Seminary.
Hermeneutics is kind of, you know, that's all in your wheelhouse. That's what people are going to learn if they sign up for Pastor or for Professor Ray's class
this fall.
Yeah. Yep. And you could do that at chafer.edu. Chafer's chafer.edu. And Ray's website as well, we mentioned at the top of the hour, forhisglorynm.com, where these discussions are archived each month as well. So, Ray, where are we headed for this next segment?
Well, it's unfortunate, but the church and church leaders are somewhat intimidated by science. They should not be, but because of the overwhelming, unbelieving worldview that permeates our culture, and our culture is saturated with scientific ideas and technology, we have a very high respect for science, rightfully so, but we should not put it above Scripture. But unfortunately, as a result of that, theologians and trickle down to pastors sometimes have a hard time interpreting passages like the book of Genesis because they go totally contrary to an evolutionary mindset. So over the years, one of the main books that has been under attack obviously has been the book of Genesis, starting with it. So if you can undermine the foundation to all of the rest of Scripture,
the rest crumbles.
Yep, the rest falls away. Exactly. So unfortunately, within many churches, a lot of these old ideas that have been definitely disproven, theories concerning the book of Genesis, and particularly Genesis 1, but most of the pastors and teachers in the church are not aware, and that's one of the reasons we're here today, and we have been, that if you just apply sound biblical hermeneutics to the book of Genesis, and particularly Genesis 1, you will be on the cutting edge of science. Don't let science theories try to interpret the book of Genesis and Genesis 1.
Go to the one who created science.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So just apply sound biblical hermeneutics, and you will have basically the essence of what is real. And we've talked a little bit about some of this in the past, but we want to emphasize it. But unfortunately, there are many alternative viewpoints that have cropped up. Now, obviously, the secular view sees Genesis as totally irrelevant. In other words, why even bother? It's a religious book, has nothing to do with science. It's not going to tell you anything that is worth your time. They would classify it, if you want to read it as if it's mythological. So you have a mythological approach to it. But some of that has permeated down into the churches, and some of them have adopted some of the same ideas. In fact, there are some churches that would view the book of Genesis from that mythological perspective.
Was there a time when the major universities that you know were based on Christian values and you know based that was that were founded by Christians?
Yeah, Harvard, for example.
Right. Was there a time where what they taught in regards to creation was sound?
Well, they had, in general, in the 1700s, they essentially had a biblical worldview concerning God as creator, mm-hmm. even though not everybody was a believer, obviously. Not everyone believed in him. But at least the culture had the idea there had to be a creator. And they had some respect for the Bible as the Word of God, even though they may not have read it or committed themselves to any spirituality. But at least in terms of the worldview, in the 1700s, there was more of a biblical worldview. But towards the end, things began with the Enlightenment. Things began to think outside of Scripture. And eventually, everything became secular like we have it today, including science, and in some cases, obviously, affecting people's view of the book of Genesis. So within Christian circles, yeah. a very common view of Genesis 1 is that you don't take it literally, because it does not conform to some of the scientific theories that are very popular.
Here's how we'll explain it.
Yeah. So don't take it literally. Take it more poetically or at least non-literally. And I would say the majority of the church, that's the approach that they would take. The exception would be committed Bible churches that take a grammatical, historical, contextual approach to interpretation. They would, but even them, they are somewhat influenced by some of the secular ideas. But if you do a straightforward exegesis of the passages and just teach what is there, you will be on the cutting edge of science. And there's several other deviations or variations of what I've just mentioned. But if you take a proper approach, you will end up with the conclusion that what we have is historical narrative. And I stress historical. In other words, the creation involved a series of creative acts over six literal days by God as the creator. And you have sequence there. And in that narrative, you have lots of data that explains what God did in creating on six creative days, and then he rested on the seventh. Now, you might say, well, how could God have created so much in such a short period of time? Well, that's the wrong question. The question should be, why did God take so long, 6 days? And there's an answer to that. You see that when you get to the book of Exodus and you come to the law and you find out that God created in 6 days in order to set a pattern for mankind, a work week of 6 days and then a rest on the seventh. And God didn't rest because he was tired. He rested in order to set the pattern for man to have.
Let me show you.
Yep, exactly. So he could have said, let there be a universe, and there would have been a universe. He could have done it instantaneously because of his omnipotent power and wisdom, but he did it in 6 days, and we would take it literally because that's the text. That's what the text indicates if you take a grammatical, historical, grammatical approach. So, we can talk a little bit about the evidence in the text that tells us that, in fact, it is historical. It's certainly a narrative. It's a story. And every indication in the text is that it is historical narrative. For one, the text itself is presented historically. Most even scholars and theologians view Genesis 11 or 12 through 50 as historical. That's not question. The issue is the first 11 chapters. And those that have problems with it try to deviate from a historical approach. But there's really no difference in terms of the style of literature. He's describing the same kinds of events. They're different events, but it's presented as a story. It's presented as historical narrative. So just the presentation of itself, there's nothing in there that indicates. In fact, when you have a parable like Jesus,
right,
when he spoke in parables, the writer introduces it as a parable. Mm-hmm. Or if it's non-literal, there's indication in the text that this is a metaphorical description of something. But there's nothing in Genesis 1 or anything in the first 11 chapters that indicates that it's anything other than historical narrative. And there's some particular, even grammatical, indicators within Genesis 1 itself. In fact, one of the characteristics of historical narrative elsewhere, all over the Bible, in clear historical passages, is a Hebrew construction. It's called a vav consecutive. Now, I don't want to get too technical here, but all that means is that it's constructed in such a way that the understanding that's being conveyed is that you have an event, and then you have another event, and then you have another event, and they're strung together in a sequence. And it's very clear in the Hebrew when you have the letter vav followed by an imperfect verb, that indicates that you have a sequential sequence of events. And we can illustrate that from Genesis 1. And let me just, I thought I had it here. Let me pull it up real quick in my computer.
By the way, if you just tuned in, we are visiting our monthly visit with Ray Mondragon with the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, csfnm.org, and they'll be meeting next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. It's a free opportunity to meet monthly at Faith Bible Church Central and Moon, and they'll be showing a video, actually, this next Tuesday, and you're invited to be a part of that. They'll be showing circular reasoning in dating methods from Dr. Andrew Snelling. And Ray, we're up against a break. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll jump on more evidence from the text,
right?
As far as Genesis 1 being a historical narrative. We'll get back to that right after this on ABQ Connect. All right, thanks for joining us. ABQ Connect, heard daily in the 1 o'clock hour. Actually, coming up later this week on tomorrow's broadcast, God willing, we'll have Jack Hibbs on the broadcast, author of Days of Confusion, D-A-Z-E, Days of Confusion. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about his new book. And, of course, many of the KLYT listeners very familiar with Pastor Jack Hibbs as we air his broadcast daily at 4:30. The Real Life Radio. And then another portion of the show tomorrow, we'll let you know more about the Moving Forward Conference that's coming to El Paso. We mentioned it earlier in this hour. On Friday's broadcast, in addition to getting ready for the Man Up event this Friday night, we'll have the leaders from Man Up on the broadcast, as well as our Heritage Foundation update and our Friday financial update with Brian Cochran from John Moore Associates. So great content daily at 1 o'clock, and the rest of the week is no exception, as is the rest of this hour no exception. Ray Mondragon, our guest today from the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, and he's a professor at Chafer Seminary. We mentioned a couple of times Chafer educational opportunities coming up this fall. And you can go to chafer.edu for details on that. Ray, when we left off, we were talking about Genesis 1:1 as a historical narrative. And we left off with some of the evidence from the text tell us that it is right. A historical narrative. It is, and as you mentioned, it is a story. You know, for those who would say, well, it's just a story. Well, no, it's a story, but it's not just a story.
It's historical narrative is the literary form, basically.
Yeah.
What I was going to begin to tell you is from when it says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, that's an introductory statement to kind of summarize what Moses is going to get into here. From God's revelation, obviously. And then right off the bat, verse 3, and the New American Standard tries to capture it with the word then. In other words, in this sequence, beginning in verse 3, then God said. That's a vav consecutive. The said there is a imperfect verb, and the then is that vav, or the Hebrew and, basically. Could be translated and, but then is a better translation. Then God said, let there be light. And then you have another and, another one, a second one. And again, you have the same construction. You have vav consecutive. And then in verse 4, God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. Another vav consecutive. And you can go through, there's probably as many as 35 sequential descriptions, much like what you have right here at the beginning. In fact, each day starts off the same. Then God said, let there be, verse 6, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters. and let it separate the waters from the waters. So almost every "and" in there introduces a sequential event, a creative event, or something related to it.
Yeah, so, I mean, this quote-unquote story is along the lines of, hey, let me tell you what happened.
Yeah, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's clearly not poetic. Now, when we think of poetry, English poetry, one of the main characteristics is what?
Rhyming.
Rhyming.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is not true with Hebrew poetry. Hebrew poetry, the main characteristic of Hebrew poetry, and obviously Genesis 1 is written in Hebrew, is what's called parallelism. And what you mean by, what we mean by parallelism is that you have one line makes a statement, and then you have it followed by another line that if it's synonymous parallelism, then it repeats the same idea using different words. That's parallelism. You don't have parallelism in Genesis chapter 1. You can have synonymous parallelism and look for one statement and then followed by the identical idea but phrased in different wording. And you see that a lot of the Psalms, psalm after psalm after psalm, will be synonymous parallelism. Some of the Proverbs are also synonymous parallelism. But in Proverbs, you have another kind of parallelism. It's called antithetical parallelism, where you have one statement, and then the next line is the
antonym.
It's either the opposite,
right,
or a contrast. And oftentimes, the second line starts with a but. In other words, the godly or the righteous,
but
something
the evil,
about him, but. But
right.
The unbeliever, or the lazy, and then the diligent, you have the contrast. You don't have any of that in Genesis chapter 1. You don't have parallelism at all. So it's not poetic. It is clearly historical narrative. So that is a major internal line of argument in terms of support for historical narrative. And there's other notes in there as well. You have evening and morning,
right,
little phrases that indicate we're talking about time here, we're talking about sequence,
about
events.
I mean, essentially it's saying, so on Monday.
Yep, this happened.
On Tuesday,
yeah,
or actually starting
exactly
with Sunday.
Yep.
When it was written, so mm-hmm, on Monday.
Right.
Okay, hey, listen, if you just joined us, we're up against a break. We're going to take another quick break, our final break of the show today, and come back and get into our final segment with Ray Mondragon from the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. We're going to come right back. We'll be there right after the break. KLYT's broadcast of the live service from Calvary Church, the Expound Bible Study, tonight, although tonight not necessarily Expound, is typically with Pastor Skip Heitzig going verse by verse through a book of the Bible. John Miller is the guest tonight, so make sure, and we're going to be airing John's message, so tune in to hear that tonight at 7 o'clock. Service gets underway at 6:30 if you want to be in attendance at 4001 Osuna Road Northeast. And we hope you'll tune in or be present for that midweek Bible study. And we're pressing on with our conversation with Ray Mondragon with the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. And we're still in the portion of our conversation today looking at evidence for Genesis chapter 1 being historical narrative and some of the evidence actually from the text. We'll press on through that, and then Ray will have some more as well.
Other evidence, for example, there are several references in the Old Testament back to Genesis 1 or back to, for example, Adam and Eve, mm-hmm, particularly, or the garden. And in every other reference in the Old Testament, it looks back at historical personages or historical locations.
And it's not so much, yeah, remember that story about it's, when looking back, it's, well, you know, Adam and, you know, Adam.
Yeah. In other words, he was a real human being, a real person that lived in time.
Right.
He was not a mythological or a symbolic character. He actually existed and did certain things, obviously. And particularly the fall of man in Genesis chapter 3, which follows right after Genesis 1 and 2, which deals with the creation. And the same pattern you find in the New Testament. In fact, most of the writers of the New Testament in some way allude back or directly to Genesis chapter 1.
And actually, as I think of, you know, the New Testament, you know, as through one man, sin entered.
And this is in a, yeah, this is a theological passage that is basing the doctrine on a historical event. In other words, Adam was just as real as Jesus.
Right.
In fact, Jesus is the second Adam.
Right.
So there's no mythology. There's no symbolism. Adam is viewed as a real person. And for example, Luke, you have a genealogy of the Messiah, and the genealogy traces it all the way back to Adam. So it goes through all those early chapters of Genesis that includes other patriarchs. But it goes all the way back to Adam. So you have a lot of little notes like that and statements. For example, Stephen in Acts chapter 7 refers back to the early chapters of Genesis, particularly Abraham. So he viewed certainly Genesis as historical. Jude refers to the seventh generation. This is the early chapters of Genesis. Enoch, referring to Enoch, and viewed him as historical. So all of the characters in the early chapters, when you come to the New Testament and they're referenced, they're all presented as real human beings or real incidents that are referenced. So the New Testament, and if that's not enough, Jesus himself, when he's teaching on marriage in Matthew chapter 19, he goes back in the beginning, it was not this way. In other words, he's talking about divorce, and this is not the purpose, or this is not the outcome that it was designed in terms of marriage. And he takes it all the way back to Adam and Eve. So Jesus, in fact, he refers to Abel, and he refers to the incidents in the early chapters of Genesis. Jesus viewed the early chapters as historical narrative. There's nothing in there that indicates symbolism or poetic language. It's all historical narrative. So to take a proper approach is that's the starting point in terms of how do you treat Genesis 1? You treat it like any historical account.
Mm-hmm.
And then it informs you concerning a lot of scientific issues, some of them we've discussed before.
It's kind of amazing to think, you know, when we, and this is another subject, but the authenticity of the Bible and what we know about how much more it's represented closer to the original documents than any other that someone might question the Genesis being history. Or accurately being, you know, represented, but there's other ancient writings that they're much more ready to accept as history.
Yeah, yep.
Well, that's, you know, that's the enemy would regularly want to attack the foundation.
Yep.
As you mentioned earlier,
if you can undermine the foundation, then the rest of the structure built upon it will collapse as well.
Yeah, so this is good. I almost hesitate to use the word fodder because it sounds so. It's good building for conversation with someone who would question these thoughts. All right. Where else?
Let's start with Genesis 1:1.
Okay, we got about 5 minutes, but let's see.
Now, obviously, Genesis 1:1 is a theological statement. I mean, no one would dispute that. You know, any statement that deals with God is theological. And the whole Bible obviously deals with God. The whole Bible is theological. But most people don't think of Genesis 1:1 in terms of a scientific statement. Now, it's not a statement you might find in a textbook, but it deals with issues of science. In other words, it deals with the natural realm. And I like to point out that when you speak of science, science deals with material things. It deals with matter. It deals with objects. Well, in Genesis 1:1, we have the heavens and the earth. In other words, the universe. All of matter. So ultimate and all of matter. Science deals with energy. And the creation displays tremendous amounts of energy. So in the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, he built energy into the universe. We're the beneficiaries of the energy that comes from God's created sun. So science deals with matter, deals with energy, it deals with processes. Science evaluates cause and effect and processes that go on. We have the ultimate process in Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created. That's a creative process, the ultimate in creative processes. Science deals with agency. In other words, what causes certain things? Where do things originate? Cause and effect again. And here in the beginning, God is the ultimate cause of the entire universe.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, in Genesis 1, you have the when, who, did, what.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
And science, if you have a process, it usually goes through time. And here we have in the beginning, the very first word in the Hebrew text. It's one Hebrew word. It's a combination word, but it's one word, Bereshit. In the beginning. So we have the beginning of all time, the beginning of all processes. So I view Genesis 1:1 giving us data or information that is just as much scientific as what you might find in a descriptive scientific statement elsewhere in any physics or chemistry textbook. So Genesis 1:1 starts right off the bat giving us the foundation to all of the universe and where it came from, God being the ultimate cause of it all.
And can we put a bow on it in about a minute talking about science and day one?
Yeah, we'll continue what we start today. And I think next month I'd like to get into some of the text because there's lots of science. There's lots of science in Genesis 1. In fact, we see the origin of all of the sciences that we study today contained in Genesis 1. Not all of them are explicit, but you have the implications of virtually every science. The life sciences, obviously, God creates creatures, but also the physical sciences like physics and chemistry. In fact, you could see right off the bat, the second verse there, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. The deep there refers to waters. In fact, it's explicit in the same thing. The Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. So you have H2O.
Right. Chemistry.
Chemistry already, verse 2.
So, well, we could do this all day, right?
Yeah, we could.
But we will do it again next month, and we hope you'll join us for that. But a reminder, Ray is encouraging you to go to chafer.edu, chafer.edu, Chafer Theological Seminary, where he's a professor, and fall opportunities are found on the website. Ray, thanks so much. Let's do this next month.
It was fun.
All right, and join us again tomorrow. Jack Hibbs, God willing, we'll have him on the show. So tune in, 1 o'clock daily on ABQ Connect.